We're holding on Ein Zion Umud Beis, about the middle of the wide lines. The line begins Achzik. So what are we? 12 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday the story of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, of how he used to stick. He used to go together with Balei Rasan, with people who suffer from the terrible contagious disease Rasan, and learn Torah with them. And the, when he passed away, we said that he was able to outwit the Malach HaMavis and get into Gan Eden alive. So now the Gemara tells a similar story about one of the other Chacham. Reb Chanina bar Papa Shushvine Hava. Reb Chanina bar Papa was his friend. So Rashi explains he was friendly with the Malach HaMavis. So therefore, he was he'd be able to talk to the Malach HaMavis on an equal level and be able to get what he wants out of him. On the other hand, the Iyun Yaakov on Ein Yaakov says that maybe in fact Shushvine means he was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's friend and therefore he was of the same caliber as him. Anyway. When he was about to pass away, so the based in Shamayla told the Malach HaMavis, go do what he wants first, give him his last wish. So he went to Reb Chanina bar Papa and appeared to him, and Reb Chanina bar Papa realized that that means his time is up. But Reb Chanina bar Papa asked him, Shavki tlosin yoim, leave me alone for 30 days. Let me have an extra 30 days. Ad neder tamudoy, until I review all of my learning. De amri, because the Chachamim say, Ashrei mi shebolakan b'talmudei biyodei. Happy is the person, fortunate is the person who comes here to Gan Eden with his gemar, with his learning, with his Talmud in his hand, meaning that he reviewed it and knows it well. So the same way, I want to have one last chance to review my learning before you take my neshama and take me to Gan Eden. So the Malach HaMavis left him alone. Levasat plus and Yemen also is chazalei. After 30 days, the Malach HaMavis came and reappeared to him. Omalei, he says again. So now Rav Chanina bar Papa says, Ach vili duchtoi, show me my place in Gan Eden, like Rav Yeshua ben Levi had done. Omalei l'chaye, so the Malach HaMavis says, okay. Omalei havli sakinach, and Rav Chanina bar Papa says, like Rabbi Shimon Levi before him, give me your knife, because you might otherwise threaten with me with it on the road. Omalei, now the Malach HaMavis was a little smarter from last time. He says, what are you trying to play the same trick on me that your friend did? And you're going to take away the knife and then you're going to leap into Gan Eden alive like he did? The reason why, essentially, how is Rabbi Shimon Levi able to get away with it is because if the Malach HaMavis still had his sword with him, and then he would have been able to physically prevent Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi from getting into Gan Eden alive. But he didn't have it, therefore Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was able to outsmart him. But now he says, I'm smarter, I'm not gonna fall for that trick again. Omalei, so Rabbi Chanina bar Papa says, and if I do, so what? I see Sefer Torah of a Chazi. You want, bring a Sefer Torah and see. Mi ikamidi deksib be deloi kiyamtia. Is there anything written in the Torah that I haven't fulfilled? So yes, maybe I am of the caliber to go into Gan Eden alive. Amalei, but the Malach HaMavis says to him, fine, you did keep everything in the Torah, but mi icharches bevalei rasan beiaskes b'Torah. Did you sit together with Balei Rasan and learn Torah like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi did? So he had that extra schus that he worked even with the Balei Rasan and didn't worry about the contagion and anything and sat and learned Torah with them. You don't have that schutz. So you may be on a very high level, high enough to be talking one-on-one with the Malach HaMavis and be given your last wish, but to go into Gan Eden alive, you're not of that caliber. By the way, I forgot to mention yesterday, actually, the Medrash in Ovis of Nosson, I think it is, that lists 9 people that went into Gan Eden alive, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, of course, is one of them. But Rav Chanina bar Papa is not. So the Gemara says, "Va'afilu hochi." Even so, he was on such a high level. Ki noch nafshe. When Rav Chanina bar Papa passed away, ifsikle amuda denura bendi de la alma. A pillar of fire stood there and separated between him and everybody else. Which means, in other words, it was meant to represent minashamayim that nobody else is worthy of even approaching him. So, like, there's a pillar of fire over there. Nobody else is able to come anywhere near him. We had back on Daf Yud Zayin, actually, similar, where it said over there about Reb Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, he used to dance in front of a kala with three branches of hadassim, and Reb Zera criticized him for that and said it's beneath the dignity of a Talmid Chacham. But then when he passed away, there was this pillar of fire, and then everybody realized that Ahanyele Shutisya Vasava and Shtuse Vasava and whatever, that his way of doing things, this ostensible shtus of his, in fact, brought him to a tremendously high level. So here, similar to Reb Chanina Bar Papa, it showed that he was on an extremely high level. Ogmiri, because in fact, we have the Kabbalah. In fact, we have the Kabbalah, that such a thing, a pillar of fire like that, appears for only one special person in a generation, or at most two people in a generation. So therefore it shows how high Reb Chanina Bar Papa was. Well, the result was, the fact is, they still need to bury him. Krav legabei Reb Aleksandri. So Reb Aleksandri went over as close as he could get to the pillar of fire. Omar, and he says to Reb Chanina Bar Papa, we need the pillar of fire to move. You need to ask Hashem to move it. Asei b'shvil kvod chachamim. Do that. Allow the pillar of fire to move for the covered of the chachamim, so we can get close to you. Loy ashkach, but he didn't pay attention, and the pillar of fire still remained there. He said, Asei b'shvil kvod avicha. Do it for the covered of your father. In other words, Reb Aleksandri is saying, if your father was still alive, this Amuda Denura would actually be separating you from him as well. So do at least for the covet of him that he's not alive anymore, the Pashtus, but his neshama should be able to approach yours. Still Layashkach, still Reb Chanina Bar Papa didn't pay attention to that. Finally, Reb Aleksandri said, Asei b'shvil kvod atzmecha, do it for your own covet so we can get close and actually bury you. Otherwise, how are we going to be able to bury you? Istalik, and then the pillar of fire went away. So Amar Abaya, says, so in that case, what was the point of the pillar of fire? Who was it trying to exclude? It was meant to exclude from Reb Chanina Bar Papa's company anybody who had not kept even one letter of the Torah. Sometimes you have, Marashal points out, you have some halachas that we learn from one single letter in the Torah. So you can say that when a person kept every single mitzvah and every single halacha, then it can be said on him that he kept every letter in the Torah. So the pillar of fire was meant to exclude anybody who's not on that level. We said before, he had said to the Malacham Lavis, is there anything in the Torah that I haven't fulfilled? So therefore, anybody who's not of that caliber couldn't come close. So Omele Rab Adar Bar Masna, says to Abaya, in that case, also La Puki Mimar. In that case, that would have been meant to exclude you as well. Dela Islay Maikela Igre. After all, you Abaya are not doing the mitzvah of Micah. You have a roof and you don't have a fence around it, like the Torah says. So, in other words, he was using this opportunity to give Abaya a little musu. You're being careless with that mitzvah. But the Gemara says Valoihi. Actually, it's not so. Mi have a hava. In fact, Abaya did have a Micah around his roof. But at that point, a wind had knocked it down. So therefore, Reb Adar Bar Masna thought that there had never been one up there to begin with. He didn't realize that, in fact, Abaya had put up one and it had just gotten knocked down. Ben Yoyada points out that still, in a certain sense, Reb Adar Bar Masna is correct, because a mica that can be knocked down by a wind, he's telling Abaya, then you should have built it more strongly to begin with. I mean, I guess, you know, in Abaya's defense, we could say it was a hurricane or something. With that said, there are a couple of drushim. There are a couple of drusha type explanations of what Reb Adar Bar Masna meant. The Chassam Sofer talks about that we know from the Gemara in Yevamos that Abaya we had earlier in our Masechta as well, that Abaya was not careful about the din of katlonis, that you have a woman whose husband's passed away previously, and he went and married Choyma. We learned on Daf Samachay of our Masechta. Even though two husbands of hers beforehand had passed away, and there's the possibility that maybe already there's a chazaka. So therefore, sort of Adar Bar Masna is hinting that to him by using the metaphor of a mica. The point of a mica is to prevent people from falling off your roof to preserve their lives, and he's telling Abaya you're not being careful with something involving that. And then there's a vote from the Ishbitzer that says that he's hinting to Abaya that the tzaddik of the generation, like you, is responsible for protecting the Hamloinam and working with them and bringing them up to a higher level Beruchnius and protecting them from troubles Beruchnius, and he says you're kind of falling down on the job. So the Gemara finishes off. Amar Rav Chanina, mipnei ma en balei rasan bebavel. Now we talk about this rasan disease. Why is it Rav Chanina says that you don't find it in Bavel? The reason is mipnei she'ochlin trodin v'shosin sheicho shel hizm. Because in Bavel they regularly eat trodin, which are beets or spinach or some related vegetable like that, which is healthy for you, and they drink beer. And then they drink beer that has hops in it that grow on hizmi. A hizmi is a type of thorn bush that grows on it, a parasitic plant which they use in making beer. So they drink that kind of beer in Bavel, and that mitrodin keeps them healthy so that they're not susceptible to rasam. And Omer Rabbi Yechanan named Ma'in Mitzeroyim b'Bavel. Rabbi Yechanan says in this connection, why are there no Mitzeroyim in Bavel? Where Mitzeroyim doesn't necessarily mean only Tzaras of the Torah. It can include other kinds of skin diseases as well. Anyway, the reason is, he says, Mabesha Ochlin Trodin, Meshosin Shecher, again, because they eat beets and they drink beer, unlike in Eretz Yisrael, where they mostly drank wine. V'Roichtin, they made pros, and they bathe in the pros river, which the water of that is good for you, and therefore they're less susceptible to these kinds of things. Hadron alachamadu asishtai. The next parak now, the eighth parak, we're going to be dealing with, so we've talked here and there in the Masechta about where a woman has nichsim alug. She has property that she brought into the marriage after she and her husband were married. We have nichsit tzoin barzel, which are written into the ksuba, and the husband takes full responsibility for them. He's entitled to the keren of them. He uses the actual item itself. And just at the end, if he dies or he divorces her, then he has to reap. He has to give her back the actual thing and reimburse her for any losses or whatever. And then you have nichsim alug, where to begin with, the husband doesn't actually own them, but he's entitled to payrus of them. And nichsim alug will be in general where she didn't have them at the time of the marriage, she gets them afterwards. So now we're going to talk in this parak about dinim involving that. The Mishnah says, Ho'isha should naflo nechosim ad shalit isaris. If a woman came into possession of nechosim before her erusim. So Rashi says that it means that afterwards. So you're asking something? All right. So Rashi says it means that this is she acquired these nechosim before her erusin, and then afterwards she was nisaris. Afterwards she was niskadish, and the question is going to be, what rights, if any, does the husband have over these nechosim? Tosfos discusses that maybe not necessarily. We're talking about over here that later on she got married, not just Averson. Anyway, Moedim Beshama Beshillo Shemoicheres Venesenes Vekayim. Now both Beshama and Beshillo, who further on in the Mishnah are going to argue about some other cases. In this particular case, when she got the Nechosim before the Averson, and now it's during, according to Rashi, it's still during the Averson. According to Tosfos, it's even after the marriage. Even after they got fully married, both Bishamel and Bishil agree, Shemei Cheres V'Nesenes, she can sell or give whatever of the Nechosim she wants, V'Kayim, and that sale or that gift will stand. We don't say, in other words, that the husband has rights to payrus of these Nechosim, given that she got them before the Erusin. So again, Rashi would say that this means, specifically if it's now during the Erusin, as opposed to Rashi says, if she got married, then the dinim are different, then we're going to talk about later in the Mishnah. And Tosfos says that no, it can mean even if she got married. Later on, when we talk about the difference between before and after she got married, we're talking about nechosim that she acquired while she was in Arusa. So in other words, in short, like this, Rashi and Tosfos are saying like this. If she got nechosim before her Arusin, now she's an Arusa, then Rashi and Tosfos both agree that the Mishnah means that she can sell and gift whatever she wants. Now, if instead she got it before she was an Arusa, now she's not only gone through the Erusin, but also the Nisuin, Rashi will hold that our Mishnah is not saying already that she can just sell it freely, because now it's Nichsim Alog and her husband has certain rights over it. And Tosfos says that no, the Mishnah means even if she got married already, she can still do whatever she wants with it, because she owned it even before the Erusin, and it was not written into the Ksuba as Nichsit Tzoin Barzel. So therefore it doesn't become Nichsim Alog either.
I said, the only time the day it actually becomes mixed.
So Nuchsim Alug would be only if she got them after the Eris.
After she's
right. So now, mission is Nuflo mission is Arisa. What if she gets these Nechosim after the Erisin? So here's where you have a machlokes. Beshama Umim Timker. Beshama says she's allowed to sell them because, after all, the Nisuin hasn't happened yet, and her husband doesn't have rights to the Paris until. So while she's in Arusa, she can still sell it. Once she gets married, then no, then it's going to become Nichsa Malur. But while she's still in Arusa, then she can sell it, says Bishamai. Or Bishilol, I mean, Loin Timker, Bishilol says that she cannot. But they both do agree that if she did, then B'dievet, it is good. An interesting point, by the way, the choice of Siyamtev says, why the expression... Later on Amud Beis, Rashi explains it's not so much that she's not allowed to sell them, according to Beis Hillel, but rather that if a prospective buyer comes to Beis Din to ask whether he should buy them, Beis Din will tell them no. So the Tosfos Yom Tov makes an interesting point. He says, because after all, she has the option to not go through with the marriage. She can say, okay, you were Makadish me, my chosin, but I don't feel like going through with the marriage. Like, give me a get and let's have it over with. On the other, so therefore she has more of an ability to sell. It's really more on the buyer. The buyer shouldn't be buying it without unless Beis Din tells him to go ahead.
Okay, the only thing is we can't force him to give a get.
But the point is, in other words, she has the ability, even let's say, to delay the marriage. I mean, we learned before, for example, that after 12 months. The expectation is the marriage is good. Is she entitled to food or whatever? Yeah, but the fact remains that she could continue delaying it. So therefore, in that sense, the fact that there was going to be a marriage is really not so certain yet. That's what the Tosfos Yom Tov says. Anyway, so again, Bes Shammai says she could sell it. Bes Hillel says that not.
The actual money that she gets does it go to him automatically?
So the actual money that she gets. So if it's not Nichsa Malug, then it would mean the pashtus that she can keep it. On the other hand, she's going to be bringing it as an asset into the marriage. So then, what's going to happen with that money? It might become Nichsa Malug. It might become Nichsa Tzayin Barizal. That's something else. Yeah. So again, Bes Shammai says she could sell. Bes Hillel says she shouldn't. But they both agree that b'diavad it is good. Amr of Yehuda, Amru Chachamim Lifnei Ram Gamliel. So Rav Yehuda says that the Chachamim pointed out to Ram Gamliel, is this right? Hoyo v'zocha be'isha, once the husband is zoicha in the woman, she is, after all, his arusa, and he doesn't have certain rights over her yet, as we're going to say on Amud Beis, but still they are, to a certain extent, considered husband and wife. Lo yizke b'nechosim, shouldn't he have schus over the nechosim as well? Why is Beis Hillel saying, so actually we're going to learn in the Gemara what Rabbi Yehuda is referring to, but let's take it on a simple level. In other words, that he's saying, so the Gemara is going to say, is he talking about the fact that Beis Shammai says lachatchilo he could sell, or the fact that Beis Hillel says that b'diavad it's valid? So we'll get back to that in the Gemara. But anyway, why should that be? Given that, after all, she is his wife at this point. So Rav Gamliel answers the Chachamim, al chadoshim or uboshim, we're embarrassed enough about the new ones. In other words, even when she gets property after she's married, we're a little embarrassed to say, we don't understand why the Chachamim would say, as we're going to say later in the Mishnah, that the husband has the right to undo the sale at that point. Fine, he's entitled to Paris, but to the extent that should make him be able to undo the sale, why should that be? So we have a hard enough time understanding that. And you want to put on us the old ones? You want to ask the chosim that are old that she got even before the nisuin? You want to say the husband should have the right to undo the sale? We can't say that. Continues the Mishnah. Naflo mishin nisis. What happens now if she gets nechosim after she got married? So now both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree that if she sells or if she gives any of it away, shabal motzi miyad alakuchus, that the husband can take away from the buyers, because again he's considered, so to speak, the first buyer. So therefore, like, his rights come ahead of theirs. Different Rishonim talk about, does that mean that he wouldn't even have to reimburse the buyer the money? The Rambam says if the money still exists, then he has to reimburse the guy. But otherwise, if the money's already been spent, then he doesn't owe it back. Different other Mephoshim talk about different other Rishonim talk about ins and outs of it. One thing I think the Rivosh points out that, listen, after all, the guy bought it to begin with at a discount because, after all, it wasn't certain that he was going to be able to keep it, given that it's Nichsa Malug, given that eventually if she dies first, then it's going to become part of the husband's estate, he's going to yaushin it, etc. So therefore, if he loses his money, fine, he took his risk.
The money was spent. That was
the if the money was spent, then the Rambam, right?
Because she had the money.
Right, but the point is, if the money was spent, so she sold it, and now the money's been spent. So the Rambam paskens, and in that case, the husband doesn't have to reimburse. Nobody has to reimburse the buyer. But if the money still exists, then yeah. Anyway, actually, nisus venisus. Now, what happens in another case? What happens if she got the property before she was married, and now she's married? So now Rashi explains again that in the first half of the Mishnah, we were talking about before and after Eirusin, and now we're dealing with after. Now we're dealing with after she was married, after Chuppah. So again, Tosfos earlier said that up till now we may have been talking about certain cases where it was after the marriage as well. So now we're talking about more specifically when she got in the chosim, before she got married, whether before the erusin or whether during the erusin, and now she's married. So now Rav Gamliel omer mocher v'nos nakayim. So now Rav Gamliel says that if she sells property or gives property of that, then it's fine. Then the sale is valid and the husband can't undo it. So again, Omer Rav Chanina ben Akavya. So Rav Chanina ben Akavya says, similar to Rav Yehuda, although the Gemara is going to point out these are two different opinions, otherwise it wouldn't repeat it in the Mishnah. But so we'll see in the Gemara exactly what they're arguing about. But anyway, Rav Chanina ben Akavya says, Omer Lifnei Rav Gamliel, the Chachamim said in front of Rav Gamliel, same logic as before. Once he's Zoycha in the wife, and once he married her already, before we were talking about only Erusin, now we're talking about she's fully his wife. Shouldn't he get the nechosim as well? Shouldn't he have the ability to undo the sale? Because after all, she sold it after she was married. She only acquired it before she was married. And again, Amalahem al chadoshim on uboshim. And Rav Gamliel says to them, we're already embarrassed about the new ones. We have a hard enough time understanding if she gets nechosim after she gets married and sells them after she's married. Why we would say, as Mishnah said earlier, that habal motzi miyad al kofas elashat megalgalon aleinu ayishanim, and you're rolling onto us the old ones. In other words, you want to say that the same din should apply to ones that she acquired even before the Nisuin, and we're not going to do that. So we'll see in the Gemara again. So basically, Rabbi Yehuda is applying that statement of the Chachamim to property that she got, that she sold during the Erusin, and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is referring that discussion to property that she got during the Erusin and sold after the Nisuin. The Mishnah continues. Rabbi Shimon Cholik ben Nechosim Lenechosim. Rabbi Shimon says there's a distinction between different kinds of Nechosim. Nechosim are you doing labal? If they're nechosim that the husband knew about, loy timker, then she shouldn't sell them. The imacher benosna bottle. If she does sell or give it, then that's bottle, because then the husband expected to get payers from them. In fact, we showed him explain, given that, why does the husband get payers in the first place? We learned earlier in the Masechta, because in case she gets captured by goyim, in case she gets captured or taken prisoner or whatever, then the husband has a responsibility to pay money to ransom her. So therefore, in return for that, the Chacham gave him payers. So therefore, only when it's Nechosim that he knows about is he expecting to get payers from. So therefore, on that basis, we want to give him those payers in order to give him an incentive to ransom her. But if he doesn't know about them, so he continues, Shain and you're doing labal. If these are nechosim that the husband didn't know about, loy timko, she still shouldn't sell them. Be macher v'nos nakayim. But if she did sell them or give them, then it's valid because the husband didn't know about them anyway, and therefore they don't really factor into his consideration of ransoming his wife. The Rosh talks about over here. Not everybody agrees with this, but the Rosh talks about there can be two different cases. There can be where he knew about them, or where there can be where he actually knew that they exist, or where he expected, he knows that she doesn't have them yet, but he expects that they're going to come to her. He knows, for example, that they're property that belongs, let's say, to her father, and that she has no brothers, and therefore that she's eventually in line to Yarushin or something like that.
The Rabbanon say over here also, you have to let the money go to the husband.
What happens with the money afterwards is a separate question. Then we could say that becomes part of Nichsam Alur. But right now we're talking about property itself. Does the husband have the right to take back the property, to say, I'm entitled to pay this from this property, therefore I want the property back? That was, so far we had the various distinctions in the mission.
Right. Can we say also the reason why he has the right to do that because he's giving her parnasa, he's feeding her?
So it's not so much parnasa. Parnasa, the fact that he's feeding her, we said in return for that she gives him maisi adel. The fact that he's entitled to pay us from Nichsam Alug in return for that is if she's captured, then he has to. Right. So being captured is a bit of a rare situation, which also factors into this, right? Okay. So the Gemara says, Maishna Reisha, the white pligi, or Maishna Sefer de pligi. Why is it in the Reisha when she's a she got this property before the Erisin. Now she's an Arusa. We're saying that therefore the husband has no rights, and therefore both Bishama and Bishol agree that she can sell and that she can sell freely. Umayshna Sefer de Pligi, why is it in the Sefer if she got the Nechasim after the Erisin? The fact is, we're talking about she's still doing the Erisin, she sold it. Why only in that case? So Bishama and Bishol argue. So the Gemara says, Ami Dvei Rav Yanai. They said in the Yeshiva of Rav Yanai, the difference is like this. Reisha Bishusa Naflu, because in the Reisha, in the very first case of the Mishnah, when she got this property before even the Erusin, then it was in her schus, not schus in the usual sense. We mean as far as mitzvahs, but meaning, in other words, that her husband had no rights over her yet. She wasn't even Arusa. She was independent. Therefore, the logic is that the husband has no right later on, even though now she's an Arusa when she's selling it, or according to Tosfos, maybe even an Asua and she's selling it, the husband can't say, I have rights over it, because the fact is she got it before he ever had any rights, before he and she ever had any relationship.
This is a matter of, when I was speaking here, she's a Katana,
she's a No, but well, if she's a Katana, she can't sell anyhow. Rapashas, we're talking about when she's a Naira, or we have to be talking about either when she's a Naira or a Begeris, or we'd have to be talking about when, for whatever reason, she's out of her father's Rishus. Yeah. Sefer bischusay naflu, as opposed to in the next case where she got it during the Erusin, then already he had certain schusim over her. She's already his Arusa. So now that's where Beis Shammah and Basilel are going to be arguing. So he already has a certain ownership over the property. So the Gemara asks, "In bischusay naflu ki macher v'nosna amaykayim." Okay, in that case, then why is it that if she sells, then it's good? According to Basilva, we're saying she shouldn't sell because of that, but the b'dievet she did, it's valid. Why? By that logic, if it was b'schus enoflu, then it should be the same thing as if she got it after she got married. Ella, no, we have to say a little differently. Reisha v'adai b'schus enoflu. In the Reisha, for sure, it's in her schus, because of course, it's before the Erisin even, she and he have no relationship at all. Sefer emor b'schusa emor b'schusay. When it comes to the sefer, though, we have a suffix. The erusin makes a kind of suffix nisurin. They might end up getting married. They might not. Like we said before, it is possible for her to keep on delaying the marriage. It's even possible they may not. They may decide not to go through with it. We may have, as we learned in the previous parak, mumim or other things that he discovers about her, etc. And therefore, the marriage never happens. So therefore, it's a kind of suffix. So ema b'schusa. Therefore, the hatchila loy timko. Therefore, the hatchila she shouldn't be selling it in macher v'nosna kayim. But if she does, then b'diavad b'silul is going to say that it's valid. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Amr Rabbi Yehuda, Amru Lifnei Rabbi Gamliel. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says the Chachamim argued as follows in front of Rabbi Gamliel. They said once he was zoicha in the woman, shouldn't he also be zoicha in the nechasim? So, Ibay Lahu, Rabbi Yehuda al hatchila oy adiavad. Is Rabbi Yehuda referring to the case of l'chatchila? And the question is, why is Beis Shammai saying that she can sell in that case even l'chatchila? Beis Hillel, in other words, the Chacham, according to that way of looking at it, the Chacham is saying, Beis Hillel, we understand. Given the suffix we just said, or actually we're talking about a different case where she got it in the chosim after the Erusin, then so it's not quite the same suffix, but it is kind of, because during the Erusin she got the property, so therefore Beis Hillel could say that we're not sure, and therefore the Chacham she shouldn't sell, but the Evid, if she did, then fine. But the question is, in that case, why would Beis Shammai say she could do it with Chacham? That's one way of understanding the Chachamim's question to Rav Gamliel. The other way of understanding the question is they're asking why in the case of b'dievid, why is Beis Hillel allowing the sale to stand when, after all, we should say the husband maybe has rights over it and maybe he should have the right to take it away. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos discusses at some length and says maybe not. For one thing, why would we think that the Chachamim are asking according to Beis Shammai's opinion? The fact is, we know that Allah is not like Beis Shammai against Beis Hillel almost ever. So rather, Tosfos explains that the Lachila and b'dievid would really be we're talking about the Reisha versus the Sefer of the Mishnah, the case of before the Erusin, where if she sells, that we say that Mecheres v'Nesenes v'Kayim versus Mishnis Arsa, where we're saying that she shouldn't. So according to Tosfos, the question would be on that. Which are the Chachamim referring to? So Toshma, the Gemara says, let's prove the Tanya. Amr Rabbi Yehuda, Amru lifnei Rabbi Gamliel, hoyo v'zu ishto v'zu ishto. They said to Rabbi Gamliel, the Chachamim, since the Nesua is his wife and the Arusa is also his wife, well, if she sells it after she gets married, then we said in the Mishnah, if she gets property after she's Nesua and sells it when she's Nesua, then the husband can undo the sale and take it back from the buyers. So therefore, the Chachamim are arguing to Rav Gamliel that after all, an Arusa is his wife to a certain extent as well. Therefore, the same rule should apply. And now, and Rav Gamliel answers them as he did in the Mishnah, we're embarrassed enough to understand why even in the case of property that she got as a Nesua, why the husband should be able to undo that. Why are you even putting on us the Yeshonim and then saying that he should even have the right to undo it in an earlier stage during the Erusin? So Shmamina Di'ebed Kamar. So we see from that clearly that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the discussion was about the Di'ebed case. So according to Rashi, in other words, the question was not according to Bais Shammai's opinion, it was according to Bais Hillel's opinion. Why is it b'dievet if she sells that it's valid? The Chachamim are arguing that it shouldn't be valid. And Rav Gamliel is telling them, we have a hard enough time understanding why when she's married, why when she's married, the husband would have the right to undo the sale. And you want to tell us even in the case when Bais Hillel allows it b'dievet, you want to say it shouldn't be allowed? We can't do that. According to Tosfos, it's rather that the question is not on the Reisha of the Mishnah, the case where she got in the Chosim before she was an Arusa, but rather the Sefer when she's in a Suah. Or after the Avosim. Yeah. Okay, so Shmamina, good. So that proves that's what Rabbi Yehuda's quotation of the discussion between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim is referring to that case. Shmamina literally means you can hear from it. So in other words, we can prove from that, we can, you know, that Rashi points out in a number of places and in Chumash and the rest of Nach, that many times the word Shema doesn't mean to hear, it means to understand. Shema Yisrael, for example, literally, even though we always translate hear, O Israel, really it means understand Yisrael. So the same thing, Shema Mina means you can understand from what we just said, that is in fact the case. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanya, Amar Rav Chanina ben Akadia, Loi kach hashivin Rav Gamliel l'chachamim. Now we have later on in the Mishnah where Rav Chanina ben Akavya gives a different context in which the Chachamim asked Rav Gamliel this question and Rav Akiva answered. We said that was in connection with where she got property before she was married and now she's married and now she sold it. As opposed to Rabbi Yehuda had referred it to the case where she got property when she was an Arusa and now sold it during the Erusin. So we learn in a Braisa, Amar Rav Chanina ben Akavya, Loi kach hashivan Rav Gamliel l'chachamim. That's not what Rav Gamliel answered the Chachamim. That's not, the discussion was not in connection, like Rabbi Yehuda says, with the case of an Arusa, but rather an Asua. Ela kach hashivan. Rather, Rav Gamliel answered them as follows. He said, Loi, you can't compare the case of, you can't compare the case. So he's saying that no, I agree the original discussion was about an Arusa, but there he wouldn't need to answer them al Chadoshim versus al Yeshanim. He would have a much stronger answer if they asked him about Arusa. Because instead he could tell them, Loi, imamartim minasua. Now how do you compare an Arusa to an Asua? You buy an Arusa, she'ein baila zakai loy b'mitziyasa, the husband is not yet entitled to anything that she finds, that kicks in only after the Nisuin, v'loy b'maisiyadeha, he's not entitled to her earnings, again, only after the Nisuin, v'loy b'afaras nedareha, he by himself can't veto her nedarim, only together with her father when she's an Arusa. So he wouldn't have even had to give him. Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya is saying, Rabbi Yehuda, you're saying that the Chachamim asked Rabbi Gamliel about the case where she's an Arusa. And the only answer he could find is, look, you know, why should it even be the din by Nesua? And you want to apply it to Arusa? He could have given a much better answer. Fine, the din applies by Nesua. But by an Arusa, it's a whole different ballgame because he's not yet Zakai in many things of hers. So rather, says Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya, Omruloi, so now the discussion continued, that they said, okay, you're right, but Rebbe Mochrolad Shela Nisis V'achak, that's fine, that applies if she sold it before she got married. Nisis V'achakach Mochramahu, what happens if she got married and only then she sold it? Then what would be the din? Now you can't say anymore that he's not Zakei B'mitziyasa, etc., because he is. So what are you going to say now? Why shouldn't he have the ability to undo the sale? So he answers them, in fact, if she got the property before the Nisuin and she sold it after the Nisuin, then also it's valid. Omru lo, so now they say, so now they ask, what do you mean? Now already he's zoche in the woman, and now you can't say before, like before, that he's not zaka b'mitziyasu of maisi adera, etc. Because now as an asura he is. So now what are you going to say? Omalahem. Now he gives them the answer that he said in the Mishnah. That we have a hard enough time explaining why if she got property after the Nisuin and sold it after the Nisuin, why should she not be able to freely sell it? And you want to say that if she got property before the Nisuin and sold it after the Nisuin, that she shouldn't be able to, that we can't understand what the logic is even on the original din that you want to do either. So in other words, Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia is saying that Rabbi Yehuda, you were saying that we're asking him about the case of Erosin, but he's saying that no, the Rabbi Gamliel would have had no reason to use that Chadoshim and Yishanim answer in connection with that. He would have had a much better answer. Rather, the discussion continued, and eventually when it came to, when she got property before Nisuin and sold it after Nisuin, that is where Rabbi Gamliel was saying that if at least we could understand the reason why the Chachamim anyway made the Takana, that he should be able to undo the sale of property that she got after Nisuin, sold after Nisuin, then fine, but we can't even understand that reason, so what are you asking about the other case? Okay. So the Gemara asks, V'hanan t'nan ad t'la nisis v'nisis yom gamli olamim mochra v'nos nakayim. What do you mean, though? We said in the Mishnah that if she had property, if she got property before she got married, and then she got married, then Rem Gamliel says if she sells or gives, then it's kayim. So here in the Braisa, he's saying mecheres v'nesenes, which means v'chatchila she could sell or give and kayim. In the Mishnah, though, he was only saying im mochra v'nosna, if the diavad she did it, then it's kayim. So what is it? Does he allow her to sell it v'chatchila or b'diavad? Amar Rav Zvid. So Rav Zvid says, you're right, toni mecheres v'nesenes v'kayim. You're right, you have to correct the wording in the Mishnah and say that it means that she could sell even l'chatchila. Rav Gamliel in the Mishnah doesn't mean that she can only do it b'diavad, he means she can do it even l'chatchila. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation at all. This is Rashi's girsa. So before Rashi, there were different girsos, and Rashi says, this is the girsa that he prefers. Tosfos says, on the contrary, if you have a Mishnah and a Braisa that contradict each other, the more logical thing to do, we always assume the Mishnayos are more accurate than the Braisas. So what we should be doing is correcting the Braisa to make it match the Mishnah, not the other way around. So rather, Tosfos brings and Tosfos has some other problems with Rashi's Rashi's explanation. And so Tosfos says, you're right. What it means is the Gemara is not correcting the Mishnah to match the Braisa, but the other way around. The Gemara is correcting the Braisa to match the Mishnah. Rav Gamliel is not saying she can sell l'chatchila. He's agreeing that she shouldn't sell l'chatchila, but he's saying b'dievet, if she did, then it would be valid. And when they ask him why, he says ala chadoshim anu boshim. Then Tosfos brings something else from Rabbi Nachmanu, that the point is we don't want Rav Gamliel to be a point of Beis Shammai, because after all we know the halacha is like Beis Hillel. So we could actually use Rashi's Dirsa.
You say that
al chadashim on a boshim. Yeah,
it means that she actually sold it now after she was.
So now what it means is Rav Gamliel is saying, even in the case where she got property after the chuppah, and now she sold it after the chuppah, we're saying in the Mishnah, everybody agrees that the husband can undo the sale, but Rav Gamliel is saying, I don't even understand why that should be the case. How much more so if she got the property before the Nisuin, before the chuppah, and now she sold it afterwards, you want to say that she shouldn't be able to, I say you can't apply such a din. So again, according to the Mishnah, according to the wording that we have in the Mishnah, it sounds like he's saying only b'dieved should she sell it. The Braisa was saying l'chatchila. So now we're saying we're correcting one to match the other. According to Rashi, we're correcting the Mishnah to match the Braisa. And according to Tosfos' first explanation, the other way around, we're correcting the Braisa to match the Mishnah. But either way, we're saying that the Rav Gamliel will say that in that case, the sale is valid. Even though she sold it after the chuppah, because she got the property before the chuppah. If she had gotten the property after the chuppah, then and sold it after the chuppah, then that's when Rabbi Gamliel would agree with all the other chachamim that in fact the husband can
undo. She got it after Edison, but she actually sold it.
But she sold it after Nisuin, right? Okay. Rapapa Amar. Rapapa says you don't have to correct any wording in the Mishnah or in the Braisa. Harab Yehuda, Alibadin Gamliel. Harab Chananim et Halar Chananim et Akavi, Alibadin Gamliel. Very simple. The Mishnah versus the Braisa are reflecting the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Rabbi Yehuda says that Rabbi Yehuda understood Rabbi Gamliel to say that even if she got that, even if she sold the property as an arusa, she shouldn't do it l'chatchila. So therefore, Rabbi Gamliel is going to say for sure after nisuin she shouldn't do it. She shouldn't do it l'chatchila. So in other words, Rashi says even though in the Mishnah Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya is talking only in the case where she sold after the nisuin, in fact he would argue with Rabbi Yehuda about what Rabbi Gamliel means in the Reisha in the case of Arusa as well. So the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya's version, and the Braisa that says that it's only b'diavad would be according to Rabbi Yehuda's version of Rabbi Gamliel. So the Gemara asks, Rav Chanina ben Akavya ke b'Shammai. In that case, then what? It comes out, Rav Chanina ben Akavya's opinion is like b'Shammai. B'Hillel, after all, said by Erusin that she shouldn't sell l'chatchila, and only b'dievet if she sold is valid. If Rav Chanina ben Akavya is saying that Rav Gamliel holds and that we should hold, that if she sells, that she could sell l'chatchila during the Erusin, that would come out like b'Shammai. And the answer is Hokikama, fine. What Rechanin ben Akavya means is Lo Shama Besilol Al Dabazet. This would be one of the examples where we would say that he disagrees whether Beshama and Basil ever argued about this at all. So he would say there was no argument, everybody agreed, like the opinion that's attributed in the Mishnah to Beshamai, Rab Khanin ben Akavya would say everybody agreed to that. Only in a different case would there be a machlok Beshama Basil. So the Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel da Ami Tavayu. Now Rav and Shmuel both say a different din. No, Ben Shenoflol and Nechasim Adshel and Isarisa, whether she acquired the Nechasim before the Erusin, Ben Shenoflol and Nechasim Mishin Isarisa, or whether she acquired the Nechasim after the Erusin, the Nisis, and now she got married, then Rav and Shmuel both say, Habal Motzi Miyad Lekuchas, the husband would have every right to take the property away from the Lekuchas, because now that he married her, then he has rights over this property. So even though she acquired the property even before the Erusin, or she acquired it during the Erusin, as long as she sold it after the marriage, so in other words, when she got married to him, she still owned this property, then Habal Motzi Miyad Lekuchas. So the Gemara asks, "Command like Rabbi Yehuda, like Rabbi Chanani ben Akavya." That seems to not be like either of the Tanoim we said. Meaning, whether Rashi Tosfos teaches it out, whether we're talking about we said before the Omru Lafana, the Chachamim were arguing to Rabbi Gamliel. So whether we follow Rabbi Yehuda's version or Rabbi Chanani ben Akavya's version, either way, they seem to be saying that if they both agree that if she got the property before the Erusin and now she sold it after the Nisuin, that Michra Kayim, that the sale is valid. So the only argument is if she got the property after the Erusin. So who are Rav and Shmuel following? They're Amiroyim. They can't argue with Tanoim. The answer is, the answer is that they're following the opinion, another opinion of Tanoim, of Rabbi Sein. Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Seinu Chozer Benimnu, Rabbi Seinu, which means another group of Chachamim, voted together, and they decided, whether she acquired the property before the Erusin, whether after the Erusin, the Nisis, and now she got married, that the husband can take it away from the Lekuchas, so they're following that. So if she sells it, if she sells it after the Nisuin, then the husband can undo the sale. So the Ritva points out, so why didn't Rav and Shmuel just say the halacha is like Rabbi Seinu? And so he says, because this braisa was not well known to the Chachamim. So if we said the halacha is like Rabbi Seinu, nobody would have any idea what they're talking about. So therefore they said it as if like an independent statement, and then we find the braisa that supports what they're saying. Yeah. Okay, we said in the Mishnah Mishin, Nisus Elo Ve'elo Moedim, we said that if she got property after she got married and sold it while she's still married, then everybody agrees that the husband can take it away. So the Gemara says, "Lema tenein l'takonas usha." Does that mean that in our Mishnah we've learned of something that they made in usha? We learned earlier in our Masechta and Daf Mem Tes Nun that there was a period of time when the Sanhedrin was headquartered in usha and in the north of Eretz Yisrael in the Galil, and then they made a number of takonas. One of them was this: the Omer of Yosef Reb Chanina, but usha hiskinu, that they made a takona in usha. Ha'isha pusha machra b'nichse malug b'chaye baila. If a woman sold nichse malug while her husband was alive, umesa, and she died, habal motzi miyad alakufas, then the husband can take away that property from the buyers. So it sounds like our Mishnah is saying exactly the same din, in which case, why do they need to make that takona in usha? Now, the interesting point, by the way, is usha was a couple of generations before Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. in Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah lists 10 places where the Sanhedrin went into Galus, and you have Usha, and only after that do you have Shfarim and Beis Shaorim and Sipori and whatever, and that's and then Beis Shaorim and Sipori were where it was in Rebbe's times. So what's the problem? Rebbe composed the Mishnayos, so therefore, so let him include Takonas Usha. What's the problem? The answer is we find many, many historians and many, many writers say that before we find many cases where we see that the core of the Mishnah existed long before Rebbe. We'll have details in it, the machloikas of Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Chananim and Akavia and so forth came in only later, but the underlying din in the Mishnah existed and was composed and was learned Baal Peh long before Rebbe. So therefore, so now the Gemara is saying that Yisoida Mishnah, as they call it, this core of the Mishnah, existed long before Takonas Usha. So why would the Chachamim and Usha have to make the Takana if it was already a known din? And the answer is, Masnissin b'chayeho l'peiros, because our Mishnah is talking only while she's alive. So in other words, she got the property after she got married. She sold it still while she's married. She's still alive. The husband would have the right to take it away from the lekuchas because he's entitled to peiros. But after she dies, he would still have to return the karka to the buyer. He wouldn't yaushin it from her. So the takonas osha was takonas osha begufa shel karka la'achamisa. Takonas osha is that he's entitled to take away even the goof of the karka because he yaushins it, and it would be after she dies. So in other words, so the chachamim added a new point that this nixim belug that the husband actually yaushins that. We didn't have before. So before Takonas Usha, if she had sold the property and then she died, the husband wouldn't have any more rights over it because there's no more payers. She's dead. And the goof of the character never belonged to him in the first place. Takonas Usha was that he actually inherits the goof of the character.
Why didn't the goof belong to him? If she got it after.
She got it after the marriage, but it's only Nixim Alug. So therefore, by definition, Nixim Alug, the actual asset doesn't belong to him in the first place, only the payers.
If she has children,
eventually it would go to them. Yeah, but yeah. Well, right. I mean, if she dies during his lifetime, the Gemara discussed it, Baba Basra, a husband inherits from his wife. But in this case, she already sold the property. So therefore, the husband wouldn't have the right to yashin it until Takonas Usha, where we consider him like he had a partial owner, because he had a partial ownership beforehand. The Gemara elsewhere calls it Kinyan Peiros, Kinyan Aguf. Once a person has the right to Peiros from a certain asset, to a certain extent, he owns the Guf. And the Takonas Usha is based on that he has the right to the Guf to actually take it away from the buyers after she died.
It's all the kind of because just in case she gets captured.
Not so much, no. The Peiros is more in case she gets captured. You were talking about the Guf of the character because he was entitled to Peiros, therefore now they made it that now he has a certain ownership over the Guf to the extent that he could take it away from buyers after she dies. Okay, we said Reb Shimon Cholik ben Nechasim. We said Reb Shimon draws a distinction whether the Nechasim were known ahead of time or not. So we say, so Elohen you're doing, but Elohen she ain't you doing. What do we mean known versus unknown? So Amar Rav Yosi ben Chanina, you're doing makauki. The word you're doing means karka. Because karka you have to know about. So therefore, you can't hide karka. So therefore, necessarily, he must have had that in mind when he married her. So he was expecting that eventually she's going to yaushin this property. And therefore, Rav Shimon says, therefore, she doesn't have the right to sell it without his permission. Sha'in you're doing metalplin, as opposed to unknown would be metalplin, because metalplin you can easily hide. So he doesn't even know, he doesn't even have a reason, he doesn't even have a smichas das that she's going to inherit in the first place. Rabbi Yechanan says no, whether they're karka or metalplin, they can both be called yiduin. The elu hein sha'in yiduin, what is the definition of sha'in yiduin? Koshi a shevis kan benafla nachasim l'dinas yam. If she's living in one place and the nachasim are the nechassim, she inherits nechassim in Medinas Hayam in a different place that the husband may not have even known that she's in line for Yerusha over there. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hachi, in fact, we learn a braisa like that. Elohein Shein Yiduin, Kol Shia Sheves Kan, Menachlo Nechassim Medinas Hayam. So that would be what Reb Shimon considers nechassim Shein Yiduin, and was saying that if she sells it, then the husband doesn't have any rights to undo it because he didn't know about it even the Hatchila. So again, it can't factor it into any calculations of his about what she's going to own and what he's going to consider that he has to do for her because he didn't even know this property exists or that she's in line to Yashima. Okay. Everyone.